Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. Joining us today on the program is David O. Stewart. He is the author of Impeached, The Trial of President Andrew Johnson and the Fight for Lincoln's Legacy. He joins us by telephone from, I'm guessing, somewhere in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yes, I'm in the Maryland suburbs.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I understand that impeachment is something that you actually are somewhat familiar with.
Well, it's true. I practiced law for many years, and one of my more interesting cases was defending a federal judge who was being impeached about 20 years ago, a fellow named Walter Nixon from Mississippi. So we went through an inquiry by the House of Representatives and a trial in the Senate, and we were so unhappy with how we were treated that we brought a lawsuit and took it all the way to the Supreme Court. Sad to say, we didn't win anywhere, but it was a very interesting ride.
Did that experience plant the seed for this book?
Not directly, but when I was... my first book was on the writing of the Constitution, the summer of 1787, it's called. And I was looking for sort of the next time in our history. When I finished that book, I was looking for my next book for the next time in our history when the Constitution really made a huge difference in our future as a nation. And I concluded that the impeachment trial was that moment. Actually, the Constitution had failed terribly with the Civil War, so impeachment came shortly thereafter and was a real crisis, and the Constitution was the central element of it. And it was just that much more interesting to me because I had some impeachment background myself, and to be honest, was always intrigued by the Johnson case, which had never made a whole lot of sense to me. So I was grateful for the opportunity to go back and really take a close look at it.
I remember studying the years of the Civil War and Reconstruction in American history classes, and I always got the impression that President Andrew Johnson was a really good guy, and he really was mistreated by Congress. And your book kind of sets that whole idea on its ear.
Well, there's been seasons in Andrew Johnson's reputation. There was a period in the first half of the 20th century when that really was the dominant view, that he had been this fellow who wanted to make peace with the South and just was trying to do the right thing, and these nasty Republicans in the Congress were hell-bent on revenge, and they wouldn't let him do it, and they just, in a small-minded and terrible way, went after him. And I think as you dig into the facts, it looks a lot different. You know, the Reconstruction story is a terrible story in how we treated the freed slaves. In many ways, we really just allowed the reinstitution of many of the elements of slavery in the South. And the Republicans in Congress were trying to prevent that, and they were very unhappy with Johnson because he was supporting it. And that's really what the conflict was over. So it turns out, really, that Johnson was on the wrong side of history. And I think that's, something that needs to be corrected in our history. And I think we're in the process of doing that.
Had Abraham Lincoln lived, how would Reconstruction have been different, do you think?
Well, that's an awful tough question, because when the war was coming to an end, Lincoln said, when you beat a man, you let him up easy. So he intended to be lenient to the Southern states. They were our countrymen, was his view. So Johnson's initial steps as president, when he succeeded Lincoln after the assassination, were consistent with what Lincoln wanted. What I think would have been very different is, in the Southern states, left to their own devices, they very much returned Confederates to power. And the people who caused all the trouble in the first place, frankly, were able to take over in the states again, and, as I said, begin to reintroduce many of the elements of slavery. And I don't think Lincoln would have put up with that. He was an awfully good politician. I think he would have tried to figure out ways to reach out to the Southerners, but also to make it clear to the Southerners that they had actually lost the war and they needed to make basic changes. He wouldn't have had the sort of conflicts with Congress that Johnson did, and I think it would have been much more social change in the South than we got with Andrew Johnson as president. So I think there would have been some substantial differences.
I think one thing that's forgotten after all these years is that Johnson was a Southern Democrat, and he was somewhat unique in that he was the only Southern senator who voted against secession.
Well, that's exactly right, and he actually stood by the Union. He stayed in Washington in his post. So that was why Lincoln picked him as his running mate in 1864, because Lincoln wanted to do what we would now call a move to the middle. He wanted to reach out to border state voters and to more conservative voters, and Johnson was the ticket there. But when he became president, we had this terrible anomaly that the Republican Party had placed in office a Southern Democrat with whom they disagreed about almost everything. So, you know, we do have a history in this country of presidential candidates picking their running mates without much attention to how they would be as president. And Lincoln certainly did that. And it turned out to have really unfortunate consequences.
We're thinking of another Johnson, perhaps?
Well, he did some good things, too. You're referring to Lyndon Johnson, but that's certainly an example. And I think you can see it through many of the selections. I think I would certainly, a famous one not too long ago is when George Bush the First picked Dan Quayle. I mean, that really was not a well-thought-out gesture, or even John McCain picking Sarah Palin.
The book is Impeached, The Trial of President Andrew Johnson and the Fight for Lincoln's Legacy, written by David O. Stewart, who joins us on the program today. As Johnson is introduced in your book, he immediately is recognizable as a guy who's somewhat intemperate, and I'm referring not only to his temper, but also to the fact that he seems to have a fondness for the demon rum.
Yes, well, he was known as a drinker. You know, Americans drank a lot in those days. As Johnson liked to point out, Ulysses Grant had a lot bigger problem with alcohol than he did. Johnson had a very unfortunate episode when he was inaugurated as vice president in March of 1865. For whatever reason, and it's not well explained, if he was just nervous or was feeling poorly, he knocked back three tumblers of whiskey about 10 minutes before he took the oath of office. So he gave his acceptance speech dead drunk, and it really was a horribly embarrassing moment. He really humiliated himself, and it was a bad beginning to his presidency, and it created a question. Whenever he did anything controversial for the next 4 years, people would really say to each other, well, I wonder if Andy's drinking again, which is not really where you want to be as president. So it was an unfortunate start, and it did sort of stick with him.
It also is intriguing to see that Ulysses Grant, who you just mentioned, now a war hero after the war, the general who really did it for President Lincoln after so many failures, he's a big part of this story, too. And here's a man with presidential ambitions, and his interactions with Johnson are fascinating.
Well, indeed. He was not a highly political person until this period, but it was unavoidable. The Army was really the tool for change in the South. And the Union Army occupied the South for 11 years after the war, and that's how congressional statutes were enforced in the South, was really at bayonet point. And Grant became persuaded of a couple of things. That one was that the freed slaves were being mistreated terribly and that was just wrong, and that the president was trying to undermine congressional statutes. And both were true. I mean, the president really was trying to. These were all statutes that had been passed over his veto. And Grant really played politics in a way that we would be shocked today. He declined to enforce some of Johnson's orders. He really actively conspired against his own president. Ended up in a very public spitting match with the president right before the impeachment trial. So, and in fact, lobbied against Johnson in the final impeachment vote. So he was became a very politically engaged figure in this period, largely because he was so opposed to Andrew Johnson's policies.
The group of Republican senators known as the Radical Republicans were the ones who were the most determined to overcome some of the things that President Johnson was doing. And we have three constitutional amendments that Johnson really dug his heels in on. He didn't want these to be passed, did he?
Well, you're talking about the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, and he was okay with the 13th Amendment, which was prohibiting slavery. So we shouldn't hang him for that one.
Okay.
He did oppose, though, both the 14th and the 15th Amendment. The 14th Amendment, of course, due process of law and equal protection. And the 15th Amendment guarantees the right to vote directly for black people. And he did oppose them. It really was all part of his effort to turn back the clock. I mean, he told fellow Southerners after the war, he would sort of taunt them and say, "You see, I was right. If you guys had just stayed in the Union, we could have saved slavery." He really didn't see anything wrong with slavery, which is a pretty fundamental moral flaw. I don't think we're being unfair to him to call it that.
The impeachment trial of Andrew Johnson was the result of this incredible conflict between these very outspoken and powerful Republican senators and a president who really wasn't afraid of them very much, was he?
Well, he was a stiff-necked guy. He was a tough guy. He'd come from nothing. He had been never attended a day of school in his life. If anything, he had fewer advantages than Lincoln did, and Lincoln, of course, was the original log cabin president. And he liked conflict and was comfortable with conflict. And he took his case to the people several times during his presidency, and speaking tours and things like that, and not with much success. But it really was his nature not to give in. And he was an extremely confrontational president with much of this legislation that was adopted to change the Southern governments and to deal with the freed slaves. He made no effort to have any sort of negotiation with Congress over provisions that he might be able to live with. He just vetoed them, and then Congress just passed them over his veto. It was an angry time. It was the residue of the war, and people were still pretty angry.
And while this political drama was playing out in Washington City, you had horrible acts of violence being committed against blacks in places like Memphis and New Orleans.
Yes, and there were riots in those cities, which were just a horror. Shortly after the war, there just came to be random violence against blacks, really just bubbling over of rage by white Southerners who, took out their unhappiness with their own poverty, with the loss of the war, they'd lost many relatives, of course, and they blamed the black people, too, and they were used to being violent with them, and they were. They'd just shoot them down on the street on more than a few occasions. And then it became organized. This was the first episode of the Ku Klux Klan. Was in 1867, and it started in Tennessee, and there were a lot of groups like that, the Knights of the White Camellia and different groups with fancy, flowery, chivalry-sounding names. And this was all part of frankly, continuing the war in a sort of guerrilla nature. But it, rather than fighting the Union Army, they terrorized the freed slaves and the few Republicans in the South. It was very much a terror war that was conducted in the South by the former Confederates.
David O. Stewart has joined us. His book is Impeached, The Trial of President Andrew Johnson and the Fight for Lincoln's Legacy, and recently came out in paperback. I was intrigued by the things that you dug up in your research. And we think about Congress being lubricated with lots of money and special inducements over the years. It's a problem today. Apparently, it's been a problem for a long time. You dug up some very interesting information about some groups that were very interested in this impeachment trial. One was called the Whiskey Ring.
We have no idea what corruption is like when you we do have troubles today. I would never downplay it, but boy, back in the 1860s, government was often for sale. And the Whiskey Ring was a particularly sordid episode. It was created by actually crazy tax policy. We taxed liquor so high, there was very high tax on it to raise money for the war. We created a real black market in untaxed liquor. So there was a tremendous value to bribing your tax collectors. And it became rampant. Most tax collectors were for sale. They could make a lot of money in just 6 months working as a tax collector, and then they could resign and go off and do whatever they wished. And the whiskey interests were very interested in keeping Andrew Johnson in office so they could keep doing business this way. And so they raised a slush fund to help buy votes in the Senate, to bribe senators to vote for Johnson.
And we're talking about sums like 20,000 here, 40,000 there. But in those days, that was a lot of money.
It absolutely was. And, you know, it's the equivalent of, you know, a half a million or $1 million. And there were senators who were for sale. There's no point putting being careful about how we say it. There were senators who opened negotiations with Johnson's administration over, you know, what the price would be for their vote.
So we have a situation where after the death of this really great leader, Abraham Lincoln, we have a weak president and also what seems like a fairly weak Congress. It seems like there aren't that many really great leaders in this Congress, and the one thing that seems to work is the process.
Well, I have to say a word for Thaddeus Stevens, the congressman from Pennsylvania, who's sometimes vilified as a radical Republican and a vengeful, vindictive guy. I actually think he had the interests of the people, and particularly the freed slaves and poor people, at heart in a way that not many others did at the time. And I think he really is a figure we ought to honor more in our history. But the process of impeachment, which was sort of a train wreck in some respects with all of this bribery going on and some of the senators who switched their votes at the last minute to save Johnson, and he only survived by a single vote, then had their relatives or friends get patronage jobs shortly thereafter in a very suspicious way. But the process itself did allow for the nation, I think, to come to terms with whether it made sense to get rid of Andrew Johnson as president. It slowed everybody down. You know, when the crisis hit, and the crisis was over a cabinet dispute and whether Edwin Stanton would remain Secretary of War, the House of Representatives impeached him, which is the first step. It's like the indictment, in just 5 days. I mean, it was just an incredible speed, and there was just a furor in Washington at the time. People at the time said it was more terrifying than when Lincoln had been killed or when the South had seceded. But then when the trials started in the Senate, everything got slow because, of course, you had lawyers involved, and that slows everything down. And it allowed people to take a breath and think over, you know, Johnson's only got less than a year left on his term. What is the point of getting rid of him? Some Republicans did start thinking maybe we ought to worry more about electing the next president than trying to throw this guy out of office. So there were some real benefits that came from the process.
And these were bare knuckles times. You go back to the story before the war when a senator from South Carolina brutally caned a senator from, I believe, Massachusetts. And then you have some fascinating stories in here. I'd never heard the one about the senator, I believe he was from Ohio, who came in and put a couple of loaded guns on his desk.
Yeah, Ben Wade. He's he was a tough frontiersman from Ohio, and he brought his pistols out. This was shortly after Charles Sumner had been beaten on the floor of the Senate. They were both abolitionists. And Wade said, men of the South, come and get me if you want me, though you be 4-1 against me. I am ready. And he also told his friends that he hoped they would challenge him to a duel, and the duel would be squirrel rifles at 30 paces. He was a hard-nosed guy. And, you know, those, as I've said a couple times, these, you know, we had been killing each other. It's an important context for the whole argument that happened then. You know, 600,000 soldiers had been killed in the war. I mean, we had just put down guns when we ended up with this fight over the presidency. So, you know, it's we complain about how bitter things are today. Well, it was worse in the 1860s.
And yet, just a decade ago, we had another impeachment trial of a sitting president.
Well, we did. It's impossible not to try to compare them to some extent. I do think there are some lessons you can draw. There's only two examples, of course, and there's Richard Nixon, who didn't quite get to the stage of impeachment. He resigned before the House could vote, but he resigned because he was going to be impeached. I think you see that if a president can command the loyalty of his own party, which Andrew Johnson did, the Democrats backed him all the way, and which Bill Clinton did, the Democrats backed him all the way, it's pretty hard to get him convicted and removed from office. I think you also see a certain confusion over what the standard for impeachment is. In Johnson's case, he had absolutely violated this particular statute, the Tenure of Office Act. And the statute said that if you violated it, it's a high crime and misdemeanor. And he still was acquitted. In Clinton's case, this is a matter of opinion, but I think he gave false testimony under oath, from what I've been able to figure out. That's perjury. But I don't think it was particularly impeachable. It was over his sex life. And, you know, I'm actually okay if he lies to me about his sex life. Huh. And, you know, those are things that, you referred to the process. The process allows, frankly, senators to sort of vote what they think is good for the country and not so much worry about what the standard of proof is. And since it's a political process, you know, it looks like a trial, but it's not. It's really a political event. You know, one branch of government is decapitating the other branch. I think you do need to ultimately, and this is part of the genius of the Constitution, leave it to politicians to make a decision based on this sort of information they have at the time as to what's best for the country.
Well, I really enjoyed it, and I learned a lot from it.
Well, thanks very much.
The book is Impeached, The Trial of President Andrew Johnson and the Fight for Lincoln's Legacy. David O. Stewart wrote it. It recently came out in paperback. And if I'm to believe what I've read, you typed this up in your attic.
Well, my office is on the third floor of our house, yes. I'm the crazy guy in the attic.
Okay. And speaking of writing and writers and book reviewers, I know that you're involved with a project that's kicking off next year, and that's the Washington Independent Review of Books.
Indeed.
What was the genesis of this? What's the purpose and the cause?
Well, the cause is really dismay that there aren't enough outlets like yours, frankly, where people are paying attention to what's coming out in books and making information about them available to folks. It's getting harder to learn about these things. It's sort of ironic, but you know, book review sections in newspapers are shrinking or being eliminated at a drastic rate. And you know, our group is a group of writers, and we sort of thought that it's important to create preserve and sort of propagate the book culture and how we learn about ideas and what's going on in the world. I mean, how many important notions have come to us in the last 20 years through books as opposed to newspapers? It just allows a more thoughtful and deeper experience of, you know, what we are as humans and how we're building our societies. So we are hoping to launch in January or at the latest February, and to provide a steady stream of reviews of important and interesting books and items involving podcasts of interviews and Q&As with authors and just a lot of good, interesting material about what's going on in the world of books.
This will all be online then?
Yes, it's an online publication.
It's the Washington Independent Review of Books. And David O. Stewart has been our guest on the program today. David, we really appreciate your time today.
My great pleasure.
My guest on the program today has been David O. Stewart. His book is Impeached, The Trial of President Andrew Johnson and the Fight for Lincoln's Legacy, published recently in paperback by Simon and Schuster. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. Tune in to the Book Nook next week when my guest will be Ralph Kies. His new book is called Euphemania, Our Love Affair with Euphemisms. Ralph Kies has written 16 books, and this latest one is an amazing journey through the world of euphemisms. We all use them, and they change all the time. Do you remember when the governor of South Carolina went hiking the Appalachian Trail? Well, I think he meant something completely different from that statement. We'll be talking to Ralph Kies about Euphemania and about his other books. He's been writing a number of books over the years, and he writes them right here in Yellow Springs, Ohio, where he is a trustee of the Antioch Writers Workshop. And he is a graduate of Antioch College. Back in 1962, Ralph was a music DJ right here on WYSO. He hosted a folk music program. We'll be talking to him about that. In fact, we had so many things to talk about during our interview that we're going to have Ralph come back again. We're going to do two shows in a row with Ralph Kies right here on WYSO. That's why we call it the Book Nook. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.